listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a headshot! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Get your bags packed for World Cup 2014 as England get a 2-0 win against Poland to join the US men's national team at the World Cup in Brazil next year. But they had to do it in front of a very unfamiliarly hostile Wembley crowd last night as Polish fans infiltrated all areas of the ground and made it a very tough night for England indeed. Riots in Rio yesterday as well, ironically, as plenty of sights confirm their place in next year's World Cup. Fresh doubts around the political dramas in Brazil threw up for the World Cup next summer. And France are going to fight all the way. A letter to FIFA to complain about European World Cup seeding processes, qualification processes, and anything else they can think of talking about. I mean, really, guys, come on. France, it was unlucky you got drawn against Spain, but you're going to get through the playoffs anyway. Welcome to Wednesday's edition of World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson with some very bold predictions coming up today for the World Cup next summer. You won't believe your ears when you hear what I've got to say about it. We'll also be discussing England's victory last night against Poland and obviously a little bit on the US men's national team game against Panama, what that meant for Mexico and why would you do it? Were you, much like Charlie Bocker, screaming at your television yesterday evening in the States going, "Don't score, Graham," in that 92nd minute. And then when Aaron Johansson drilled in that strike in the 93rd minute, were you also screaming, "What are you doing?" as it gifted Mexico an opportunity to enter the World Cup through the playoffs against New Zealand. Was it the right decision for the US men's national team to beat Panama last night? I guess you'll find out next summer, but Charlie Bocker saying to us that's what the US will get and live to regret for when they get knocked out by Mexico next summer. Wouldn't that be ironic? The team who gifted Mexico their opportunity to get to the World Cup getting knocked out by them next summer. We will have to wait almost 12 months for that, but you don't have to wait 12 months nor even 12 minutes for our first guest of the day, because I'm delighted to say to talk about that US men's national team result, the win in Panama, a win on the road, and to give us his breakdown of his thoughts on the US's World Cup potential and who should be making their way to that Brazil World Cup as part of that US men's national team squad is our guest for today. Joining me on the line right now from Bleacher Report, Mr. Mike Williams, to talk all things US men's national team. Mike, it's a pleasure to have you on board, mate. How are you on this fine day? Must be a happy man after the result in Panama last night.
Yeah, absolutely. It was quite the result. It was really dramatic. And, you know, I have to say, I am actually happy that Mexico will make the World Cup. It wouldn't have been the same without them. So, well, okay, they're not going to make it, but they're still alive. They're still in the playoffs. So, you know, all around, you know, pretty good night.
I had a very late night watching this game, watching the USA take on Panama. And for me, there was part of me wondering if US fans would be screaming at the TV, especially when Zusi rose for that header late on, kind of going, "No, don't, what are you doing here?" And it looked like the Panama players as well kind of had that attitude when Zusi scored. It was like, "Why are you doing this? There's no need for you guys to be fighting here." Yet you've said you're happy Mexico are in the World Cup. Do you think most American soccer fans will have that attitude? Or do you think there will be plenty of people saying, "Why did we do that? Why did we give El Tri the chance?"
Well, okay, that's kind of hard to say. It's pretty difficult, you know, to speak for all American fans, of course.
Of course.
But for me, yeah, I really do want to see Mexico in the World Cup. I think it's better for CONCACAF if they do make the World Cup. They have experience there. You know, they'll represent themselves well, even though it's been such a tough qualification for them. And of course, they still have what's going to be a difficult two-legged playoff with New Zealand. But yeah, overall, I am happy that they are still alive. You know, nothing against Panama at all, but I think that Mexico probably will perform better at the World Cup, and I think that's better for the region.
Now, we knew there were going to be changes to the U.S. men's national team lineup last night, of course, with the four big players kind of sent home by Jurgen Klinsmann, including Donovan and Tim Howard. And what did you make of his lineup, though, in general yesterday? It was very much a mixture of a few old and plenty of new and plenty of inexperience in comparison to some other players in this U.S. men's national team lineup.
Yeah, you know, I wanted to talk about Edgar Castillo because he's been getting a few chances there at left back. And, you know, he had some good and some bad last night. He seems to be a player that Klinsmann likes a lot. But, you know, he wasn't particularly good in that first half. You know, things opened up for him a little in the second. You know, he was involved in that goal for Zusi. So I'm kind of intrigued to see what happens with Castillo ahead of the World Cup. That's one of the spots that, you know, we're not terribly deep at left back. There are a few question marks. So I thought that was an interesting one. You know, like you said, all around the pitch, it was kind of an interesting night for sure. But we knew that going in. We knew it was going to be a little different. So, you know, overall, definitely pleased with the performance.
Does it still worry you at all, Michael, that there is still a number of question marks surrounding the back four and who's going to be playing in that? I mean, since that very impressive win against Scotland over a year ago now, there's been a lot of talk about Fabian Johnson and the centre-back partnerships, the plethora of them that we've seen. Is it still a worry despite the USA's confident finish in the hexagonal round?
Yeah, it is a concern. That's why I wanted to bring up Castillo there. You know, with Johnson, I like him back there, but do we want to play him in midfield instead? You know, it kind of has a little bit to do with the wings, you know, on each side. If you have Graham Zusi playing on the right, he likes to cut in a lot. You know, that kind of necessitates having a someone on the opposite side who hugs the line. You know, so what do we do with that? Do we keep Johnson out there or do we push him back to left back? On the other side, right back, that's even more of a question. Tarundolo doesn't look like, you know, he's going to be back in time. He's missed just oodles of time. Center back, so many partnerships. I think that's something, like you said, we need to work on this. Klinsmann needs to work on this in the upcoming friendlies. I think he will. And, you know, we could see a few new faces coming in. It might be pretty exciting.
There were obviously plenty of new faces last night. And in general, there's been a spattering of new faces over the last 12 months or so in the US men's national team side. We've seen, obviously, the introduction of Graham Zusi coming in, who's been very impressive in the last 12 to 18 months or so. Who's really stood out, aside from Zusi, as these young faces that have come into the US men's national team in the last year and a half or so?
Well, you know, actually, I wanted to talk about somebody that is not in, but we might see at the in the upcoming friendlies, and that's DeAndre Yedlin. I think that it'd be interesting to see him come in, see if he gets a chance to come in, maybe be that guy in the fullback position. If not, you know, no big deal. And if he does play well, you know, that's a great find for us in a World Cup year. So, you know, he hasn't been in yet, but I think that's one guy I'd like to see come in. That might be pretty interesting.
What makes that so, Michael? Because there's been plenty of questions around the Sounders. They didn't have an overly impressive middle chunk of the season, obviously raised their game towards the end of the year and then are going through a bit of a drab patch again. Yedlin's been a great player for that Sounders side, but it hasn't been the be-all and end-all Sounders side that many thought it could be this year. So what stands out for you about Yedlin?
Okay, yeah, that is true. That is true. It hasn't been a great year for them. I just think that he's been getting a lot of experience there. You know, at a young age, he's been coming along nicely, and I'd like to just see what he can do at the international level before it gets a little bit farther in his career. I think he's already 20. Am I right about that? Yeah, he's 20 already, yeah. And we just haven't seen much of him yet. For me, it's more like I want to see what he can do in a non-pressure situation, and I think this could be a time to bring him in.
Thanks for saying he's already 20, as if that's so old, Michael, making me feel old here. No worries, man. With that, do you think that maybe Klinsmann, if he was going to take a punt, and do you think he will still change things about and bring players into these friendly games when he's had the opportunity to bring them in to these last two games, especially of World Cup qualification, where there is still the at least honour and prestige of a competitive game as opposed to a friendly game where it's completely different a lot of the time, that atmosphere and the vibe around going into a friendly game compared to something like the last two games we've had?
So do I think should Yedlin and in general
players be brought in and given only friendly experience and then taken to the World Cup?
Well, that is another tough question, of course. You know, if they do well enough, I wouldn't be against it. It probably would have been ideal if Klinsmann is going to bring somebody to the World Cup without qualification experience. That would be a question mark. And we are kind of getting ahead of ourselves here. But, you know, if somebody like Yedlin does well enough, I don't see why it would be a problem, especially, you know, if we're playing tough friendlies, you know, in the coming months, which by all accounts, it seems like we might have a few coming up. So, you know, that's a tough one, but I think it would be okay if the performance is right and if the situation demands, you know, having a new guy in. We don't have much cover, say, right back. There's not much we can do at the moment. We saw Alejandro Bedoya there, you know, last night. That wasn't really his position, I don't think, either.
It's last night, getting back to kind of what took place on the pitch rather than speculating about the potential squad. There's plenty of time for Jürgen to decide on that, of course, Michael. For the US to come back and get this victory, does it really help silence those critics, myself included, who were saying and really being quite pessimistic going into the hexagonal about trips on the road? Because it was a Panama side that were obviously so fired up for this game against a reasonably almost rookie-ish US men's national team in terms of a lot of those players hadn't played together. So is that important for them mentally to be able to get a result still on the road in an important World Cup qualification game?
I think it is. You know, there is some importance there. If you think about the last time they went on the road, it was a very tough match in Costa Rica. Obviously lost that one, you know, taken apart at the beginning of that match. And this was, like you said, pretty much a different team, pretty much the B team, playing in a match I didn't expect them to win. You know, I think Panama had to expect they'd win that match. So, yeah, that has to build some confidence. And it's never bad to lose. I mean, it's never bad to win, you know. So it's always a good thing to win. I think overall, yeah, this is something that can build confidence moving forward, especially for the younger guys that got in there.
And great as well to see that we were worried about in that Costa Rica game about the impact that losing Michael Bradley had on that US men's national team side. It's great to see, obviously, that although Bradley obviously still out, and that's a shame, to see players being able to step in and fill that void, if you will, in the heart of the pitch.
Yeah, it is good, but let's not make any mistake about it. The US will need Michael Bradley at the top of his game. He's such an important player, you know, for the U.S. in the midfield. He has such an engine up and down the field. He can be creative. He can be hard-nosed. He's very, very solid player for the U.S. For me, he's the top player on the team, the most important player on the team. And if the U.S. is to do anything at the World Cup, you know, he's got to be there. He's got to be important. But yeah, you know, it's been good to see. It's been good to see the U.S. succeeding without him, albeit in games that apart from the Costa Rica match, you know, the games that didn't actually mean all that much. Yeah, it was still nice to see, you know, the U.S. playing well without him.
There was obviously the prestige, if you will, was given to Brad Guzan to lead that back line in goal last night. Jürgen Klinsmann saying he'd earned that. We were talking about it in the build-up to the game in the week. What did you make of Guzan's performance? And not only that, but where do you stand on the Guzan-Howard debate?
Yeah, you know, for me, I've been kind of on the Guzan bandwagon just a little bit. I think this is one of the areas that Klinsmann needs to address, you know, heading into the World Cup. I don't see him making a change. I honestly don't. But if he did make a change, I would be behind it. With Tim Howard, I think we see it lately. He can have in one match he'll have a brilliant performance, and then in the next match, you know, he'll make a few, you know, questionable plays, and you'll just think, why did he let that one in? How did that one get past him? So, you know, he can either be really, really solid, or he can be just a little bit shaky. I think Guzan is slightly more consistent at this point, and I think their trajectories are definitely, you know, going in a different direction. And in the next cycle, Guzan will probably take over, surely, right? But for now, you have to think Klinsmann will stick with Howard for that experience. You know, he's been there, he's done it. And he's such a veteran and leader on this team. But Guzan, yeah, I'm kind of on his bandwagon, got to admit.
Hey, we're all riding the Brad Guzan bandwagon here at WFD as well, Michael. Don't worry about that. You're not alone there. Having said that, it's kind of funny saying that and then asking this question, but couldn't do much about the first one. But was Guzan at fault for that second one? Do you think that will stand out in Klinsmann's mind if he does see him at fault? Because obviously, Guzan doesn't get too many opportunities to be in goal for the U.S. men's national team, and to see possibly a mistake like that won't sit favorably.
Yeah, possibly so. I could see what you're saying there, but you know, Howard hasn't been perfect at this level either. I want to say in the Costa Rica match, which one was it? It might have been the first one where I thought he could have done a little bit more, but you know, Howard's been doing sort of the same thing. Every once in a while, there would just be a few questions of whether he should have been able to get that or not. Yeah, Guzan probably could have done a little better with that one. I don't think it's going to hurt that much because, like I said before, for me, Klinsmann's man is Howard. That, you know, he's the leader, he's the veteran, he's been there forever, and I don't think much is going to change, barring like an injury or just a humongous, humongous howler. You know, that would just change the landscape. So for now, to me, that's not a big deal at all, no.
And just finally, Michael, before we let you go, are you getting on another bandwagon with Aaron Johansson and the kind of the start he's had to his international career, playing with seemingly so much confidence in these World Cup qualifiers for the USA?
Yes, I am on his bandwagon, too. I was watching the previous match with a bunch of buddies from who are actually, you know, Hispanic. They're mostly Mexicans, a few Panamanians in there, and they thought he was, you know, pretty good player. And I, you know, I was just talking about him, just, you know, this is a really exciting player we have coming through. He's confident, he has some power, some strength, he can shoot. He didn't actually score in the the Honduras match the other night, but you know, I think he did pretty well. And yeah, I'm on the bandwagon.
With him at AZ Alkmaar, you're kind of disappointed that Josie decided to take that move away to the Premier League this year, because those two together in Dutch football scoring goals would surely benefit the US men's national team.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. I have to say it was the Jamaica match the other night. Sorry about that. But yes, let me just talk about Josie for a minute. I'm a bit concerned about Josie. You know, his hold up play is excellent. He's a strong presence up top. The problem, you know, with him is always service, and he hasn't been getting that at Sunderland this season as much as he needs to. Now, Paulo Di Canio is now out, and that could change a few things. But was this really the best move for him, moving from Alkmaar to Sunderland? At Alkmaar, he was kind of the man. You know, he was scoring left and right. He was leading his team to trophies. And now he's playing for the team that's in last place in the Premier League table. So he's not scoring. He's not getting service. It's a World Cup year. I'm a little concerned. And to answer your question, yeah, I think it would have been great to see him and Johansson playing together. But, you know, that's hindsight is 2020, of course. So it's hard to say. But yeah, it's something to keep an eye on.
We always worry about the lure of the Premier League and its money to players coming in from outside the league, and just wondering there, Michael, if Altidore has made the right decision. It's the right move, though, for the US men's national team in Brazil 2014. And Michael, we look forward to catching up with you on a bit of Major League Soccer and, of course, the US men's national team as we get those friendlies in November and, of course, the beginning of the preview to Brazil 2014 next summer as well, mate.
Okay, thank you. I appreciate you having me on.
Hey, and appreciate you taking the time out to join us. Michael Cummings there joining us here from Bleacher Report, talking all things US Men's National Team here on World Football Daily. Big thanks to Michael for joining us and giving us his thoughts on the US Men's National Team performance last night. A man who I'm sure has a few points to talk about, and he'll probably find fault with Jose Altidore's assist for the US Men's National Team first, is, of course, Rafa G joining us here on World Football Daily. Rafa, how are we on this delightful day? I apologise, Altidore didn't get the assist on the first, but it was the it was that great build-up play that you had earlier on in the first half that I was discussing too. What did you make of Altidore's performance and in general your US side last night, mate?
I wasn't really too impressed, just because I felt like they were just a little unfocused, I guess, or just not all there, and that's fine, obviously. And then towards the end, you know, they really started to go for, I guess. I'm ready to really kind of get these competitive games going. I'm ready to kind of actually get those last games going right before the World Cup run in, you know, like the very last games, the friendlies, you know, the final warm-ups, because I think that's where we really need to, you know, just get our engines going and hit this tournament like head on. I'm really excited for 2014. Again, I'm not predicting that we're going to win the World Cup, but I'm feeling a deep run juice. I'm feeling it. But how we go about just kind of, you know, throwing a hand out to little Mexico and come on in.
I was just going to say, man, that is the dumbest thing I've ever seen. And there's a really funny point last night, okay? I was watching the highlights of the game. There's a really funny point when Zusig scores that header, 92nd minute, and he's kind of celebrating, and I can't remember who it was now for Panama, but the number two, the right back, kind of almost turns to the group of celebrating Americans next to them and kind of puts his hands like out as in, like, what's the point? Mate, what is the point in doing that? Like, why? Why on earth, if you're the US men's national team, if you know the situation, you know you're going to be able to take on Panama should you get them at any point in the World Cup tournament. Mexico, on the other hand, is such a different side of a side that we expect to see so much more from. Obviously, disappointing last night when they're lost to Costa Rica, but still, a side that we expect to see playing quality football and have the ability, once they find and get their heads together, they could be at the World Cup kind of back to, not full force, but, you know, back looking strong again and looking like the dominant force almost in CONCACAF that we almost expect them to be. Obviously, the US men's national team has improved greatly over the last kind of decade or so, and it's not as clear cut. But you would still ask most people who's the dominant force in that North and Central American confederation, and people would say Mexico.
So you're
2-1 up against Panama. Why should is Graham Zusi and then Johansson as well? Don't get me wrong, a big fan of that finish from Johansson, and he almost had the strike earlier on in the second half that whipped just wide of the post. But really, what are you doing handing Mexico that opportunity to go into the playoff spot and to still have a chance to book themselves in the World Cup?
I see your point, Juice. I really do.
We wouldn't do it for the Germans, surely. Surely we wouldn't.
The thing is that I am half Mexican, and I, you know, not that, I guess I appreciate it a little bit, because, again, being half Mexican, kind of, you know, I do follow Mexican results. Gosh, man! I mean, I have Mexican family that watch Mexican games. Like, that's just how I roll, man. So I'm happy to see Mexico in the World Cup. I'm not really excited about how it happened, obviously. I wish it didn't come down to that. But as long as they're there, like you said, there's a ton of potential for Mexico. They're going to be, you know, generally entertaining side. I really, really, really highly doubt and hope, really, that they are an entertaining side, at least, you know, or a little bit more representative of the historical Mexican sides we've seen in World Cup play. Because, you know, ultimately, once we get to the actual World Cup, Juice, I want to see the best of the best international competition. And I'm really hoping that Mexico get their shit sorted out, sir.
They didn't have it sorted out last night, losing to Costa Rica on the road. And I mean, in all honesty, surely, as a fan, you'd rather meet Panama than Mexico, despite this poor Mexico side that we've seen during the hexagonal. And they have been poor. 2 wins, 5 draws, 3 losses. A goal difference of -2. Surely you would much rather face...
Anglo-Saxon American, yes. I would want, you know, Mexico not to be qualified and take advantage of Panama. Should we ever run into them, we're probably not going to in the World Cup, because they're probably going to get knocked out in the group
stage. Do you think the lack of celebrating at full time was, A, in part, you know, classy from the US? I do think that was classy to not kind of be, because, you know, getting a win on the road for the US men's national team is still, you know, a bit of a big deal for them, considering the struggles that they've had in the past on the road. So getting that win, obviously, great for them, great for the confidence, especially with the side that they put out wasn't full strength. But do you think there was a part of a kind of not celebrating as in, oh no, what have we done?
I don't know, man.
I mean, I'm exaggerating.
So. No, I don't think so. I mean, again, the chances of US-Mexico meeting, you know, in the World Cup, who cares? You know, it's like, don't you want to beat the best of the best anyways, Juice? Sure, I get the idea. No, I really do, Juice. I understand. It's nice to get a nice quote-unquote run in, you know? Like, Chelsea often get a nice kind of a... Well, no, they don't. Arsenal generally. No. Well, I'm trying to think of teams who like get like a good kind of roll or a good draw and end up with like a fairly easy path to, like, you know, not late stages of the knockout rounds of tournaments. That helps them. I know, I get it. But, you know, there's two things. One, I'm Mexican. I'm Mexican. I'm half Mexican, right? So I have a little bit of a tie. Two, I'm American first, so, you know, I'm going to go for U.S. first. If Mexico do well, the nice thing is I kind of do have two teams to root for when the World Cup comes. Well, and three, this is where it kind of gets really sad and shady a little bit, but I'm a huge fan of the mother effing game, Juice. I like to see the best play. I like to see, you know, entertaining teams, historical teams with history in the tournament. I like to see them go at each other, because that, to me, you know, sets the stages, makes a lot of interesting stories, and makes those games so much more than just the game that's playing on the field. So,
for the neutral fan, and of course, I mean, I'm very happy to see Mexico in the World Cup. I'm just surprised that maybe people are so happy about it. Stateside
should make that needs to be a poll, because I mean. I just wonder how many people are, like, you know, how many Americans are generally upset at the fact that we may have handed.
I think people will look always at the win rather than anything else. And the US men's national team winning is always going to be the important thing. I'm just surprised, though, that there isn't more of a kind of a, oh, have we actually just handed it to them? We've just put it on a plate for them. Unbelievable.
It makes sense. It's a very British way, or a very Juice way of looking at it. I get it, Juice. Trying to be as pessimistic as possible, man.
Of course, we had some great fixtures elsewhere around the globe as teams booked their places in Brazil 2014. We have 21 teams who have secured their spot for the 32-team World Cup party in Brazil.
Before you get crazy, I want to bring this one up to you. Did you see, and what do you make of Edin Dzeko's response to the qualification of Bosnia for its first World Cup?
Getting out in the streets in Sarajevo with the fans, tearful.
Yes, I mean, crying with the fans in Sarajevo.
Mate, that was awesome, fantastic. Man. Fantastic to see how much it means. It means so much to him. It means so much to the country for them to be representing their nation in a World Cup. You know, an area of the world that's been through a hell of a lot. And suddenly you're looking at Bosnia, who have really smashed their qualifying group. They've done very well in it. And for them to be going to the World Cup is a great moment for that country and for Edin Dzeko. And I think if there's a player that deserves some moments like that, it is Edin Dzeko, because I think he gets a lot of stick unnecessarily. And and this is a pretty great way for and a great way for him to celebrate as well, getting out in the streets with the fans enjoying it. I mean, how cool would that be as well if you're a fan and you're kind of partying the street, you're already ecstatic that your country is going to its first ever World Cup, and then you turn and the guy next to you who you're like, yeah, hey man, yeah, oh my goodness, this is it. You're Edin Dzeko. Oh man, no way!
He was qualified us.
That would be pretty top dollar, top draw. The cat's pajamas, if you will, to put it very politely, the cat's pajamas to be partying in the streets of Sarajevo with Edin Dzeko. Bosnia have booked their place, of course. Belgium, Italy, Germany, Holland, Switzerland, Russia, England and Spain. That's right, I said it. England. We'll talk about the England game in just a moment. In the playoffs then from Europe, Croatia, Sweden, Romania, Iceland, Portugal, Ukraine, Greece, France. There are some good sides in there. Big congratulations, by the way, to Gordon Strachan for getting a home victory against Croatia. They have did the double over Croatia. I don't think anybody expected Scotland to pull that off. He has done some a few little wonders for the Scottish national time.
And I think it should be noted, the sad thing is that it was their one and only home win of the qualification. Sad Scotland.
I mean, but come on.
Let's stay positive. That's a nice kind of start to the Euro qualifiers for 2016, guys. Good luck, and I hope to see you there.
Yeah, maybe not. In South America, Brazil obviously have their place confirmed, although maybe not. We'll talk about that tomorrow on the show when Tim Vickery joins us, because last night, huge protests and riots in the streets of Rio in Brazil. It's kind of ironic that on the night that so many teams booked their place in the World Cup, suddenly the World Cup, people are saying, maybe is it in jeopardy of being hosted in Brazil? We'll talk about that with Tim and also all of the South American qualifying rounds, the final games. Big win for Uruguay against Argentina, showing their credentials, but unable to put them any higher than that playoff spot. Argentina, Colombia, Ecuador and Chile then confirming their places in the World Cup for next year. Uruguay will face off against Jordan in the Intercontinental Playoff. North America, of course, the US men's national team, Costa Rica, Honduras, they're all there. And Mexico will take on New Zealand in the Intercontinental Playoff. In Asia, Japan, Australia, Iran, South Korea, all booking their places in the World Cup. Most of those names, to be honest, you're not too surprised to see going to a World Cup. And in Africa, we still have the second legs to be played between the Ivory Coast and Senegal, with the Ivory Coast leading that 3-1. Ethiopia and Nigeria, with the Eagles winning 2-1 in that first leg. Tunisia against Cameroon was a 0-0 draw in the first leg. Burkina Faso, a 3-2 up against Algeria going into that second leg. And Ghana smashing Egypt yesterday, 6-1. Absolutely fantastic, stellar stuff from them, putting them in pole position and surely in the World Cup. Once again, Ghana, of course, the such the sob story, if you will, from South Africa 2010. Knocked out, of course, by Uruguay, the controversial Luis Suarez incident. But a great win for them against Egypt, and surprising as well. So many people have been talking about Egypt, and this Egypt side is meant to be very strong, very powerful, looking good in the African qualification. But Ghana have pretty much sent them back to Egypt and have denied them their boarding passes for the flight to Brazil 2014. Rafa, first and foremost, who do you want to see go into the World Cup then? Uruguay or Jordan?
Uruguay.
And Mexico or New Zealand?
Mexico.
Okay. What about, you got to pick four, and I know we're not going to take seeding into account here, but you got to pick four from the European playoff, guys. So you've got Croatia, Sweden, Romania, Iceland, Portugal, Ukraine, Greece, and France. Remember, Greece, you know, very recently won the Euros. Ukraine have shown and hosted a fantastic tournament last year and played, I thought, very well in the Euros. Portugal, of course, with Cristiano Ronaldo and co. France, powerful side. Sweden, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Kim Kleistrom, and the list continues with the quality in their side. Croatia, very good side indeed. Romania with World Cup pedigree, and Iceland, almost the Cinderella story, if you will. Potentially for the playoffs. So pick four.
I've got this for you already. Don't worry. It's going to be, well, I mean, ideally, I don't know the seeding, I don't know the draw and all that stuff yet, but ideally, I'd love to see France, primarily because of the history.
That's a given.
Yeah, you know, it's like you want to see France. You just want to see France in the World Cup. To be honest, I generally, you know, am okay when they lose. So, and it's for me, it's generally an interesting a game to watch, no matter what, no matter who they're playing in the World Cup. Once it gets World Cup time, right? So, France for sure. Sweden, primarily because of their fans. I mean, who doesn't love the kind of guaranteed shot of the blonde Swedish babes, you know, in bikinis somewhere, saying, "Oh, and here are the Swedish fans, ha 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 ha." You know, like it's
you're turning this into a very male chauvinist show. Surely you mean
fine.
Who?
That's just one of the reasons. I mean, generally, Sweden are a great team to watch, competitive as well. I also would love to see Portugal get in there, primarily because I think Cristiano Ronaldo should be in this tournament. Straight up.
Can you imagine the crying fit if he's not there?
Yeah, I would. I would personally throw the fit for him on the global stage. And yeah, no. Seriously, but for reals, it's like you want the best of the best players there. And the way I'm saying it maybe kind of comes off a little bit short-sighted. But generally, I think that Portugal is a competitive team. An entertaining team to watch, and I would really be interested in watching them in the World Cup. And finally, I mean, and I think you kind of stole this for me yesterday, Iceland. I mean, they're playing decent, right? They had a decent qualification round. Have they ever been to a World Cup? No. It's like, get these. I would love to see what happens with them. They seem like a good Cinderella story opportunity. I mean, I really wouldn't care how far they go. If they get knocked out in the group, you know, fair enough. Congratulations for coming, and you know, hopefully you made it worth it. You know what I mean? Mm. Hopefully you kept things entertaining in your group. But if they were to make it deep in the tournament, man, I mean, you know, that story gets really entertaining really quickly. And I will say that I kind of wanted Romania.
I was going to say, I'm not going with Iceland. However much I like the Cinderella story that I apparently have sold you on, I am going away from Iceland. It's France, Portugal you want in there, of course. I want Sweden in there because the arrogance of Zlatan to the World Cup just doesn't get much better than that, does it?
You want the best players in there.
But I want Romania there purely because they're a side that has fun at tournaments, you know? Do you remember in 98 when they all, they were wearing a bright yellow kit? I can't remember who the game was against, but all the Romanian players bleached their hair blonde and they all had it cut a very similar length. Right, so the poor commentators are there like, it's going to take us a while to work out exactly who's on the board and stuff. There's no distinguishing features.
Do we have the numbers?
Yeah, can we? Oh, God, you can't see red too well up on a yellow background. Oh, no, what's going on? Help, help. I mean, it really was kind of a really awkward moment for any broadcaster. I like that. I like the gall to go out and say, look, we're not going to win the damn thing, so let's just go there and have a laugh. You know, Georgi Hagi in 94 made a great name for Romania. It was a kind of early football memory for me growing up, seeing that strike and seeing Georgi Hagi, and a player that had, what, size 4-5 feet, I think it was, tiny feet, but what he could do with them was absolutely magical. For pure banteruskis alone, I think send Romania to the World Cup. That's what I want to see. We will get the playoff draws for you as soon as they happen on World Football Daily. I can't remember exactly how long it is until we find out who it will be facing who. But we will keep you updated on that. And, of course, on all of the rest of the qualifying taking place for the World Cup between those intercontinental playoffs and the updates on the scores in African World Cup qualification as well. We should talk discuss a little bit about England, Raf, because booked their place into the World Cup last night with what I thought was a very edgy display against Poland last night. There was a couple of the guys on the radio were talking and saying, you know, for instance, because I listened to the radio commentary whilst watching the game. I kind of sync it up like that because personal preference, I'm not a big fan of Andy Townsend and his analysis. Pretty much is it. That's pretty much the reason why I won't watch the England TV commentary. By the way, the guys on BeIN Sport last night for the US game were terrible. I was watching it, and I just really disliked the commentary on that.
That's rough, man. I'm pretty sure that was Phil Shane, but I'll have to.
No, the Geordie, the analyst guy.
Ray Hudson.
Yeah.
Mm.
That an absolute shocker for me.
Oh.
Absolute shocker.
He's been, his kind of shtick has been maybe getting old or a little forced. I don't know.
He kept on interrupting, and but not just interrupting, but it was like needless comments and really over the top. And all this
magisterial. Yeah. Oh my god. What a fantastic torch.
And there was some like dance all night, but something. It's just like, come on, you know, take it. Give us like detailed analysis. Don't just give us like yelling and over the top excitement kind of thing.
He rolled him around like a wallaby.
I don't know. It wasn't great for me. I do find that analysts can sometimes really bring down a good commentary, I have to say.
No, that's fair. I can see that.
Anyways,
I was actually watching it on silent. Because
you're at work. I was listening to the commentators anyway, and on the radio commentary they actually do have one guy doing half of the first half, and then another guy does half of the second half, and then the other guy starts the second half, and then the other guy finishes the second half. So they break it up into kind of quarters, and each commentator takes like a quarter each. I don't know why they do that, because I've never had a problem with doing a whole game of radio commentary like 45 minutes or whatever. But either way, that's the choice that they have at the BBC. I'll have to look into the tradition behind it anyway. And they had this this chap Alan Green and Mike Ingham, and Alan Green here in the UK is renowned for berating and abusing the England team when they play badly. I mean, he's the kind of guy, he's an Irish guy, and he's one of the reasons why I like listening to his commentary, is that if they're playing badly, he won't sugarcoat it. He won't be like, well, you know, at least they've got a result, but you know, it's not a great performance, but at least they've got the 3 points or anything like that. He will be there kind of saying, oh, this is terrible. Absolutely terrible from England. I've not seen a performance this bad in such a long time. I mean, it's really fun to listen to. And he said last night before the game, you know, if it gets to halfway through the first half and it's 0-0, I will be nervous if I pass over the commentary to Mike Ingham and it's 0-0. And sure enough, it was 0-0 halfway through the first half. And he said, I am feeling nervous. The atmosphere inside Wembley, created by the Poland fans, fantastic. I mean, I tip a hat to you guys, any Polish fans that were in Wembley last night, because the flares before the game, the chants and the atmosphere that was being created around the ground during the game, I mean, tip-top stuff, made Wembley feel like an atmospheric ground, which it takes a lot to make that place feel like it's got an atmosphere and not just a generic sounds being plugged in from previous England games. I mean, it's not a place where I think like it's the Aztec or anything like that to me. And it was getting really cagey for England. They didn't look comfortable. Poland, you know, every time the ball went forward and it got to Lewandowski, there was always that thought of he could actually get something. He really could pull something out of the bag. I thought Kuba was making some good charges down the flanks when he got the opportunity. And it was getting very tense indeed. Now, there were positives that came out of it last night. I thought Andros Townsend again played very well. I thought Baines played very well. Stephen Gerrard, this is basically going to be my summation of the individual performances last night, ref. Stephen Gerrard was absolutely awful, gave the ball away, gave possession away, was really slow on the ball, and to be honest, is showing signs over the last kind of 6 months or so that, I know it's a captain, but, you know, this is not the world-class Stephen Gerrard that we kind of, the England fans once knew and loved kind of thing. Carrick came in and did a job, but I don't think he did it exceptionally well in the heart of midfield alongside Gerrard. I felt safer with Carrick there than Lampard there, but still, I thought Carrick didn't set the world alight, considering they said they brought him in to really hold and control the game. I didn't feel he did that at all. Sturridge, I thought, did well, but didn't get enough of opportunities and enough of the ball. Danny Welbeck made the right runs and reads, but couldn't control or shoot a ball to save his life last night. What was up with Danny Welbeck? Rooney continued his great run of form that he started this season with, and he's showing energy, enthusiasm, and a desire to get goals, and with a great header from that corner as well to put England 1-0 up. And then I thought the back two didn't look especially comfortable together. You know, half a yard or so in that first half, and Poland are all square going into the halftime break. And I thought as well, it wasn't as convincing a performance, I think, as people thought. I mean, Joe Hart comes flying out of his goal. Lewandowski, if he pokes it past Joe Hart there, people say, Hart came flying out too quickly and went into no man's land, when in fact, Hart was just about able to get something on it and steer that effort wide when Lewandowski was played through. Gerrard's goal, it wasn't... Somebody said to me, Gerrard's goal, oh, what a magnificent finish. And I thought, well, like, it's neat. He's off balance, he's going to ground, and he pokes it past the keeper. But I wouldn't say, you know, the build-up to it is Gerrard just running and then bumbling through the defence. The ball's bouncing about, and he flings out a leg towards it and pokes it past the keeper. I mean, it was a good finish, but I wouldn't say, like, oh, what a great finish by Steven Gerrard for that.
Controlled or anything like that? No.
I mean, I don't know. Look, but my fear is now is
it's good instinct, not necessarily like the best skill, technical. Well, I mean, it does. All right, you're right. It does take technical ability and skill to do what he did, but not.
You know, Raf, how
it wasn't uber fantastical.
How last year I said that there was England were playing great football. Well, we're going to play good football under Hodgson for the first few games, and then Rooney would come back. And I pretty much predicted the Euro collapse like before the tournament. You know, I said first few games when Rooney's not there, they'll play well. Rooney will be back in. They'll focus all on Rooney.
Justadamus, making it
said. And I timed my jumps on and off the England bandwagon just perfectly. I felt last summer it was great. Next summer, here's the bold prediction. Okay. All right, I've already got it for you. England are going to end up bloody winning the thing. And I say that. I know you laugh.
Sorry, excuse me.
You laugh, and I say that with no passion in my heart in any way, shape, or form. It is going to be England will win the World Cup in Brazil next year, because there is no expectation of it happening. But what's going to happen is Rooney is going to have a stellar season in terms of effort level and a disappointing year for Manchester United. He's going to go into the summer with a lot of fire. You're going to have Daniel Sturridge go in with a load of confidence, which is going to be great, because I still maintain he's a great player. Sure. Andros Townsend is going to lose his place at Tottenham. Let's not beat around the bush at this one. However great he's played in the last few months, he's going to end up losing his place, because AVB will get a full squad once again. He'll go, right, I want Lennon on the right, I want Holtby in the middle, and I want Eriksen kind of milling around wherever, and Nasir Chadli there as well. Andros, can you take a seat on the bench, mate? It's going to be very awkward indeed. So he's going to go to the World Cup with a lot to prove. Will won't play initially, because Walcott will take his place, but then will be brought into the side. It's just shaping up for those stupid storylines are all going to come together, in that you'll have Sturridge there will be happy and content as a striker after a great year. Rooney will have the desire and the drive to finally have a good tournament, because it's been so long since he had one. You'll have Carrick in there alongside Gerrard. Gerrard will be playing like that Beckham role of everyone will be saying, oh, isn't Steven Gerrard so amazing? His last hoorah for England, etc., etc. Carrick will be in there doing the real grunt work in the middle of the park and doing a good job, and actually able to pass the ball forward, unlike Scott Parker, who, although a fantastic ball winner, couldn't pass the ball forward to save his life. You'll have Jagielka and Cahill, who will stumble and bumble their way through a World Cup as a centre-back pairing, and will be solid, but not like, you know, Ferdinand and Terry in their prime solid. They'll be, oh, God, just get rid of it. And then you'll have Baines at left-back, and hopefully Kyle Walker or Micah Richards at right-back. And Baines will have this kind of stellar World Cup performance, will bang in a couple of free kicks. And it's just going to happen. And England will suddenly, after everybody's finally accepted the fact that it's not going to happen, and that we're not a great side, etc., etc., there's going to be no expectation going into it. We'll all be saying in south of the border, South America, it's going to be difficult. We'll end up drawing a tough group and whatever, and we'll pull our way out of it, and we'll end up like winning the thing, or at least getting to the World Cup semi-final or something like that. And suddenly the hysteria around England will go from 0 to 100 once again. I just, as soon as that final whistle went, I thought, you know what? They weren't that convincing last night. They did well. They did okay. But yeah, it's just going to happen. They're going to win the bloody thing. I'm going to hate it. absolutely hated.
Yeah, I'm still kind of trying to figure it out and see if I'm on the same page as you. I don't
expect anybody to be on this page, Ref.
Yeah, I mean, it seems way far fetched at this moment, Juicer Damas. I see the storylines that you're trying to weave here, buddy. I really do. I just see
it happening. I just see there being a moment, you know, a quarterfinal moment where Rooney, 5 minutes to go, strikes a winner. There'll be Daniel Sturridge grabbing two in an unbelievable semi-final against somebody. And would you believe it, England are in the World Cup, but we're against somebody who's infinitely better than us, like any, pretty much any top national team. And somehow, you know, it'll end up being, we'll either play somebody off the park in the final and win, and lose, or we'll be absolutely awful, backs to the wall, hoofing it long upfield and end up winning somehow. I mean, yeah,
I'm sorry, I'm not trying to interrupt you or anything like that, but I do kind of wonder, have we got your like opinion on the whole European, World Cup qualifiers? Like, you know, obviously France says that they're going to be writing a letter to, you know, FIFA just to complain about the whole seeding process and things like that, FIFA rankings, etc. But what's your take on the whole qualification process? Do you think it's fair? Do you think it's, you know, it's going to give the best of the best competition to, you know, the World Cup final?
Yeah, I think it does. I think it ensures that you get the best teams going to the World Cup, as most qualification tournaments do, really. I mean, it's not like South America where it's so open, anybody can, everybody plays everybody, and it's not as exciting or as close as the kind of the hexagonal round, as CONCACAF, which kind of almost ensures that, you know, those six sides get to there or thereabout, and the top four go through. I think it's as biased as all of them to make sure that the same sides pretty much get their way in. There's very little room. I mean, we mentioned obviously wouldn't it be great for Iceland to get through? But considering that those playoffs are seeded once again, and I know there's some slight differences between the seeding and France kind of say it could have potentially had England, and I think they can potentially have Portugal as well when it comes to the draw for those playoffs, which takes place on next Monday. Thursday, is it next? It's October the 17th, I think it is, the draw. Which would be tomorrow, yeah. No, it's tomorrow then it's meant to be. My mistake. So I do kind of think that because they're seeded, and it means that it kind of ensures that those top sides are given the best opportunity to go through. Now, the whole problem really is the ranking system for FIFA. That's the trouble. You know, we've always kind of said that it's a bit skewed because of different kind of confederations having different tournaments at different times, and competitive games and non-competitive games and whatnot. And we've always said that the FIFA rankings are flawed. You know, England have been up into kind of third and fifth in it in the last few years or whatever, and you would never say that. There is a flaw to it in that sense, but I don't think the European qualification process is flawed in any way, shape or form. I mean, aside from Switzerland and Bosnia, I think. I mean, Russia, where there was so much expectation for them last summer in the Euros, they're a very good side, obviously. Belgium, we've known, are a great side. Italy, Germany, Holland, England, Spain, all sides you'd expect to be at a World Cup. And right. To be honest, the other sides that you would expect to be at a World Cup haven't missed out on these playoff spots. Portugal, France, you know, Croatia, you'd expect to be pushing for it. Sweden, with the talent they've got at the moment, you'd expect to be pushing for it. So these are teams that you would expect to probably see at the World Cup anyway. You know, you can look at like previous World Cups gone by, and there have been, you know, your Norways, your Denmarks, etc. I don't think those are your middle ground European sides who one World Cup might be have a strong squad and be looking good for a World Cup qualification process, but other years wouldn't be guaranteed it at all by any stretch of the imagination, such as this year. So where maybe that generation of quality players hasn't come through or isn't coming right for them. So I don't really see a problem with the European system in terms of it does ensure that it gets the best size to the World Cup. It's just whether you think that that's interesting enough or not, because World Cup qualification seems to be a very long drawn out process to get the same sides going through to it. That's why, you know, this South American version with everybody playing everybody in that round robin tournament type thing, is far more interesting. Far more interesting. Mm-hmm. But that's just my thoughts. Why do you think? Do you think France have got a point to this? Or do you think it's just sour grapes, the fact that they've ended up drawing Spain in a group?
Well,
and therefore,
I was reading the article about this whole thing, and I kind of like wanted to kind of, I guess, side with France a little bit there. But when I was starting to think about it, like you just kind of laid it out there, I was like, well, all the teams that qualified, I generally wanted to see there, and then all the teams that still have a chance to qualify. Well, I mean, I really would like to see them kind of there. You know, like you couldn't really pull out too many of those teams and say, man, I really don't want them in the World Cup. I could really enjoy, you know, like I said, like a Romania getting through. I think that'd be really interesting, man. I'm totally fine with it. And to be honest, Juice, I think it is kind of cool. This might be a little bit dorky, but I think it is kind of cool that, you know, each region has its own kind of specific style of qualification, you know, and it gives me more to talk about when I try to bring in new, you know, soccer fans and stuff. You know me on my soccer mission, you know, it's like a life mission to just convert as many people as I can to watch a game of soccer.
You're like a footballing Jehovah's Witness type thing. If you will. Going door to door.
I like that. That's good.
Going door to door of America to convert people to soccer.
Have you seen? Are you ready for this upcoming World Cup?
You need to take around
pamphlets and
Graham Hunter's book about Barca and use that as the good book, if you will. Have you read this book? It's called Barca. It's about the history of modern football. It's about how it was created at the beginning. This is how it was created, and then
this is the second coming of the beautiful game.
I mean, you've got the old book, you know, the kind of 1970 Brazil sides, the books about them, mm-hmm. and then this is, you know, the second coming of Pelé, if you will. It's Lionel Messi in the good Lionel book Messi. Barca. This is how he was created in his humble beginnings in a small academy in Spain, and everybody said he was too small and there would be no room for him in this side, and they gave him hormones and he grew to become strong and lead the world in football. I tell you what, Raf, you need to start going door to door with that book, my man. You could make a very convincing argument for
conceivably just convert the entire nation of the United States to soccer loving fanatics. Barca fans perhaps, but still.
Only it were that easy, Raf. If only it were that easy, then we'd be able to convert the US to be soccer lovers. Instead, we're having to rely on beIN and NBC Sport and Fox Soccer Channel and stuff to do the job for us.
Oh, congrats to Fox Soccer Channel for getting the Bundesliga, by the way. That was a nice one.
Something I wanted to ask you actually, Raf, yesterday, because do you think, I was listening back to some old kind of, there was a sports center of top 10 brawls kind of thing, internal team brawls. Obviously last night we had the under 21s with Zaha and Rafael Morrison having a bust up on the pitch last night, and you can see why Rafael Morrison was probably thrown out of Manchester United, even though he's shown he's obviously a great talented player at the moment. It's nice to see Zaha in the headlines, although, and on the pitch as well, although, you know, not for the best reasons at the moment, but but they showed the Boya Dyer fight on the pitch with Newcastle and Aston Villa a few years back, and when they both played for Newcastle and both started having fisticuffs in the middle of the pitch, and the guy said, and the commentary was actually the guy that was covering it, or the highlight clip they used was a clip that of somebody who I know quite well from out in the States, and the line was like, it was quite a kind of, I don't know, and he's that is not just a little scrap, that is a proper fight. Like, it was quite kind of Cockney accent type thing, bit geezery almost, if you will. And it was the coverage that they had in the US at the time of that incident. Now, do you think that US soccer fans have kind of almost grown up and matured so much that rather than having like the kind of the old school soccer presenters that were English that came over, to the US, very much seemed to me to be kind of almost quite stereotypical. Yeah, bloody England, mate. We bloody love soccer. Do you know what I mean, Governor? Yeah. and kind of had regional accents and sort of thing, and were very much easy to kind of be, oh, stereotypical English person, there we go. Do you think now that the soccer fan has grown up and matured, that, because in the UK we don't really have that now, we have very much our, you know, presenters on TV are non-regional accents, are very, you know, calm, there's no kind of, that's a fight, you know, it's like, and that's disgraceful, we don't want to see that on a football field. And do you think that the US has kind of matured as soccer fans, and that's why, you know, there are more presenters getting big in the US, like people like Rebecca Lowe, like Robbie Earle, of course, doing the punditry, like some of the guests that we get on World Football Daily, because it's moving away from that, oh, look, it's a game for bloody English people, isn't it, geezer, you know what I mean, right, in the US, and soccer fans have matured a lot more in the US.
Yeah.
Do you think the coverage has matured over the last kind of 5-6 years or so?
Yeah, I would say that. I think generally the bar for commentary has definitely risen. There is a lot more kind of appreciation of intelligent coverage of the game, you know, and that's generally just because of the, you know, the people who play the game. Generally, a more open-minded, not so ignorant crowd here in the States who play the game. I think in general, you know, we're a little bit more open to good commentary as opposed to, you know, the English commentary that you're kind of discussing or talking about. Yes, I think we probably still prefer an English accent, to be honest. Over your general American, you know, commentator guys, you know, I think Brian Dunseth has a lot of like really harsh eyes on him or ears on him when people talk about him. But you know, he's probably one of our best commentators out there. I will say that it doesn't help him that he has to do or that he chooses to do like, you know, 13 games a day. But you know. To me, he's probably one of the coolest kind of color guys out there in general.
And he is a top bloke as well when he comes on World Football Daily. We have to give him that too. Raf, we've got to leave it there for today, man. We have outstayed our welcome on the airwaves of World Football Daily, both you and I. But a big thanks once again. Excuse me, to Mike Williams for joining us here and taking us through the US men's national team. We are almost set. The World Cup is almost, well, I was about to say it's almost over, but the qualification almost is. Just some playoff games to go and some final positions to be decided. Only 9 places remain at Brazil 2014. We'll be back tomorrow with Tim Vickery to talk about the build-up to Brazil 2014, both in the country itself and, of course, in South American playoffs and in the qualification down there south of the border. We'll catch you then. Enjoy any games that you can find tonight. We are at slender pickings, although there is some Brazilian football this evening. Cruzeiro taking on Fluminense. Check it out if you can, because that Cruzeiro have had a stormer of a season in the Brazilian Serie A. We'll be talking about a bit of that as well with Tim tomorrow. Take care. Have a good one, and we will see you at the same time tomorrow. Adios.